It is 5:35 on Downtown, a Wednesday afternoon program. Rich Kimble here with you. Our next guest has written some of the most celebrated sports books of the last few decades. The Bronx Zoo, Bums, an Oral History of the Brooklyn Dodgers, Personal Fouls, Wild High and Tight, the biography of Billy Martin, as well as American Prince, the memoir of actor Tony Curtis. He joins us now to talk about a revised edition of his book, Red Sox Nation. Peter Golenbach, so good to have you with us here on Downtown.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Well, this is an updated version of the book, and what you've done is to focus on the last decade or so, the championships, but also the fall of this team, the Bobby Valentine disaster, and then the redemption of 2013. And my gosh, there have been enough stories and personalities.
It's just amazing what the Red Sox and the Red Sox fans have gone through in the last 10 years. But of course, you know, once they won in 2004, nothing could have been as bad as the last 86 years.
No, absolutely not. But there have been some big personalities, and you talk about a couple of them, and one of the biggest personalities of the last decade, certainly Manny Ramirez.
Well, I love Manny. I've always loved the guy. I mean, you want a player who not only is talented and hits home runs, but is magnetic and a star. A very, very interesting guy. It was funny. One time I was on an airplane flying home from Boston down to New York, and Manny was sitting next to me. He was right next to me, and he put his he had a Walkman, and he put his earphones on his ears, and he didn't say boo from the moment he sat down to the moment he got off the plane.
Well, I have a feeling he probably has never read many of your books.
All right, well, I suspect not. I suspect that he hasn't. But I'll tell you, he was one talented ball player. He really was.
How about Bobby Valentine? Now, this is a guy who had a great pedigree in baseball. He's been a real baseball lifer. That simply just didn't work out. Was that more the fault? Was he just a bad choice, or was it a bad combination?
Well, the year before, and I still can't quite figure out why they got rid of Francona. I'm still trying to figure that out, but obviously they trumped up this thing about people sitting in the clubhouse eating chicken and having a beer during the game, you know, which obviously happened, you know, any other year as well. I mean, this is nothing new, but they decided to make a big deal out of it and used it to run Francona out of town. And so they decided what they wanted to do was maintain discipline. They wanted more discipline on the team, so they decided to bring in Bobby Valentine, who was known for being a disciplinarian. The problem they had was that Bobby hadn't managed in the major leagues in those 8 or 9 years. He had been in Japan, where he had been a huge, huge superstar as a manager. He taught the Japanese how to play basically American baseball. Before Bobby came on, people would bow to each other. Nobody would slide into a runner. It was all nicey-nice, and then Bobby came and turned the whole thing upside down. And so I guess Red Sox executives figured the thing to do would be bring Bobby in and he would install some discipline on the Red Sox team. Well, he comes to spring training, and the first thing he does, he bans beer in the clubhouse. And boy, that was not a happy time for those ballplayers. And then he criticized a couple of the players, Youkilis being one of them, in the press. And that made his teammates furious. And by about the third week of the season, they basically stopped playing for him. And it was a disaster. I mean, it was just terrible and ugly, and the players were unhappy. And at the end of the season, you know, they fired Valentine, and they, you know, shuttled off. I'm still not quite sure how they did it, but they got rid of a whole bunch of the really expensive players they had brought in, sent them packing. And started over again. And incredibly enough, the next year the Red Sox won the pennant and went on to the World Series. It was truly amazing.
Yeah, what you call in the book the redemption, and it was such a remarkable year, the play of everybody in an unexpected season, and of course the connection, too, with what happened at the Boston Marathon, all made for a very special year.
Very special year. And, you know, David Ortiz was certainly somebody who the Red Sox fans have loved, but not nearly as much as after the Boston Marathon bombing. When he went and he spoke a about Boston Strong, and we're not going to let this, you know, stop us, and we're going to, you know, continue on and so forth and so on. And it was very moving, and he really spoke for all of New England. And he's remarkably beloved, and he even, you know, this year he soldiers on. He's a remarkable, remarkable ball player. He'll be in the Hall of Fame soon.
We're talking with Peter Golenbach, his book, Red Sox Nation, The Rich and Colorful History of the Boston Red Sox. And as you point out, you like to write about people. You don't want to do game summaries. You want to talk about
right. The
personalities. And there have been so many great ones through the years, and you've covered so many of them. Is there a Red Sox player that's been a favorite of yours to write about?
Well, I've had a couple of favorites, but I mean personal favorites, people I've come to know and really adore, and Ted Williams is certainly the first, or at the top of the list anyway. Dick Raddatz is one of those people. Gene Connolly was so fabulous when I interviewed him. He was just wonderful. He was a star pitcher for the Red Sox in the 50s, and he and Pumpsy Green one day, Gene decided that they were going to go to Jerusalem. They're going to Israel. They had played a game in Yankee Stadium, and they had lost, and the bus was sitting in traffic on the way to the Lincoln Tunnel, and the two of them jumped out and went into a bar, and after having a bunch of drinks, Gene decided that they were going to go to Israel, which is such a great story. And you know, interviewing Gene, the joy of doing these books is the opportunity to meet these people and to sit for a couple hours and interview them, and that's really, you know, really the fun part of it.
Well, it's a wonderful read, and it's so great to hear some of the stories from some of the players that I looked up to growing up and following the team. And I was fascinated to read again about the rivalry that existed in the late 60s between two of the team's biggest stars, Carl Yastrzemski and Tony Conigliaro.
Yeah, I mean, part of the wonder of doing a book like this are the things that surprise you. I mean, for instance, when Babe Ruth was playing for the Red Sox in the teens, and that was when they were incredibly successful. With Babe Ruth, they won championships in 15, in 1916, and 1918. But during that whole time, there was a schism on the team between the Catholics, and Ruth was part of the Catholic group, and the Protestant players. They really hated each other for the same reason that in Ireland, the Protestants and the Catholics hated each other. But despite that, you know, they went out on the field and they played very, very well and won. And going back to Yaz and to Tony Conigliaro, who were the two sort of rivals during that team in the late 60s, part of the problem was that the owner of the team, Tom Yawkey, played favorites. I mean, for a long time, Joe Cronin was his favorite. Cronin had been both a player and a general manager. We talk about Cronin in a minute because he didn't want African Americans on the team, and he really didn't want Italians on the team either, which is probably the biggest reason why the Sox didn't win very much in the 50s and 60s. But Yawkey took Yaz under his wing. Yaz came in as a young star, and Yawkey loved him. And a lot of the players resented the relationship that Yaz had with Yawkey, because he had more sway over the manager than they did.
What?
So there was jealousy there and a schism on the team. Of course, you know, they ended up winning in 67. They ended up winning the pennant again in 75, despite all of that.
And you mentioned Cronin and Tom Yawkey and the racism that occurred on this team. And we celebrate today Willie Mays' birthday, his 84th birthday. And this is a guy who could have been a member of the Boston Red Sox as early as 1949.
Well, I mean, the truth of the matter is that the Red Sox could have had, you know, all sorts of people. Could have had Willie Mays, could have had Hank Aaron, could have had Ernie Banks, could have had, you know, so many of those stars of the Negro Leagues. All they had to do was reach out and sign them. But the Red Sox and the Yankees both have the same notion, which is if we have black fans coming to our stadium, the white fans aren't going to come. And that was their thinking. And so the Yankees put off until 1954 when they signed Elston Howard, and it took another 5 years, 1959, before the Red Sox signed Pumpsy Green. And, of course, Bubsy Green was not a star like so many of the other of the early African-American players. Bubsy Green was basically a utility player, and I do believe that that was done on purpose.
Now, Peter, you and I share a love not only of baseball, but something else. I understand you're a fan of Basset Hounds.
My Fred, yes.
And how is Fred?
Fred is about 20 years old, and he's going strong. He's peeing on the floor, but he's still a wonderful dog, and he's your basic Basset.
There you go.
Come over and he'll howl.
Well, I love the breed, love Basset Hounds, and loved reading your book. It's great to see the new chapters in here about the last decade or so of Red Sox baseball. It really is a wonderful read for anybody. Don't have to be a Red Sox fan, but a baseball fan. You've really captured some of the great personalities in the history of this team. Peter, we thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
I'm very appreciative. Thanks. I enjoyed it.
Peter Golenbach, the book is Red Sox Nation, The Rich and Colorful History.